Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. As always, I'm grateful to each of you who take your time to be with us in this national dialogue right here on Talk Straight via blogtalkradio.com, BFC Institute, as well as Facebook live streaming. We're great again on this March 1st, 2022. Now, as we start the second month, this year, let's keep that dialogue going that we've been blessed to have in our sixth year now. Let's keep it alive. It's open mic night. And you know what that means if you've been following us. That means if it's a host, we step down, we step back and allow you to bring topics of interest, of concern. All we ask is that we try to keep it clean and relevant. And if you hear a differing opinion or thought, respect it. Listen, hear it out. And we'll, as we always do, we will moderate the dialogue, the conversation. And that way, in the end, you'll have an opportunity to hear a diversity of ideas that may change you, may inspire you, may not, okay? But certainly others that are listening will have that same opportunity. And that's part of what we do here at Talk Straight. We named it Talk Straight because that's what we want to do, give you straight conversation. No sugarcoating, no holding back. And that doesn't mean be offensive, be rude, or disrespectful, all right? 657-383-0944. That is the number to call. 657-383-0944. We'll be happy to entertain your questions, your comments. It's open mic, and we'll keep the phones open here for about another hour and a half or so to entertain your questions and comments. With open mic, our format is that I don't have a specific monologue to bring to you, however, and that is so that we can leave the floor open and to any caller that calls in. So be the first caller. Be the first caller tonight. I realize that tonight the President of the United States, President Joe Biden, is offering his first State of the Union address. After his first year in office, he's offering his first State of the Union. And perhaps we'll get to catch some of that in a little bit here. So I realize some people may be tuned into that. I've been told some people suggested it's a must-see event. Time will tell. Time will tell on it, yeah. But for those of you that are following us, that perhaps are dipping in, tuning in, 657-383-0944. We'll keep the phone lines open as much as reasonable here and be able to engage you here. All right? That's the number to call us here live in the studio. Then we can bring you in the conversation. Perhaps we may be joined by our co-host, Pastor Waller. He often works in ministry on a daily basis, literally in the streets. Yes, I mean literally in the streets. Powerful work that the man is doing now. We want to try to lift his hands up there as much as we can. And on this end, we'll do it online, you see. But we want to certainly encourage him to continue to press hard toward tomorrow. Yes, sir. Press hard toward tomorrow. And if you have a question or you have a comment, you have a topic, something you'd like for us to try to dig into. Now, I'm not going to say I have all the answers. If I can't give you one immediately, I promise you I will make every effort to go and research that thing and give you a reasonable response. Certainly one based on my understanding, okay, as the host and producer for the show here. But more importantly, we want to hear your thoughts and ideas. No critique there on our end. And we want to make sure that we keep it together there. All right. Well, again, it's already March. It is already March, the third month of this new year, 2022. Time is still moving on, guys. And it appears as though in toward some changes in terms of restrictions and things of that nature. That's a good thing. My hope is that people will begin to open up more and feel comfortable interacting and socializing with one another. I still have members in my family who are elderly, and reasonably we're all concerned that we do everything we can to make sure that they're not vulnerable to sicknesses and things of that nature. And that's what reasonable people can do. And we certainly, for everyone, we wish that for everyone. We are saddened to hear about all those who have lost their lives, not just to disease, but to gun violence, to domestic violence and things of that nature. Very much sad to hear that. And I pray for peace and calm in our neighborhoods, in our streets, our communities, and that we'll be able to find our way out of this wilderness of misunderstanding, despair, frustration, anguish. See, that's my hope. That's my hope. But 657-383-0944. That is the number that you can call tonight, right now. And what I'm going to do is, while I'm waiting on y'all, I'm gonna make myself happy. Amen. Yeah. I'm going to do something for myself while I'm waiting on y'all. 657-383-0944. Y'all know James Moore, Reverend Late Moore. He said something that makes sense to me, talking about how he loved Jesus. Give us a call here. You're listening to Talk Straight. It's your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. It's open mic night. It's open mic. That's your time. That's your time. And we, for the next about hour and 20-some minutes here, we're going to endeavor to keep the mics open for you. All right. Listen to Reverend James, the late Reverend James Moore, as he talks about, I don't know about you, but I kind of concur with him, a love for Savior. Yeah, who gave his life. I'm not going to preach tonight or proselytize, but I just want you to listen to him. While we're listening, you give me a call here, 657-383-0944. We have some real talk, okay? Our conversation range from politics sometimes to religion sometimes to social issues to health issues to education, all that stuff. Give us a call here. I will entertain it. And we'll try to keep it in due bounds here for the next hour or so here. 657 again, 383-0944. Listen to James.
We will I proclaim.
I'm not going to speak for nobody but myself and my own love, my infatuation with Jesus. You better figure that one out for yourself. You listen, talk straight. Just talk straight. And tonight, I've opened the microphones to you, the listening audience. Go ahead and give me a call here now. You watching me on Facebook, you tuning in. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. I'm appreciative of that. Give me a call. Let's talk. 657-383-0944. That is the number to call. Wherever you are in the world, just call Dockery. Holler at your boy, as they might say. Excuse my vernacular, my urban vernacular. Sounds good. Sounds good. You know what I mean. Again, we're grateful. So over the past month, you all know it was February, historically is designated as Black History Month or African American History Month, Negro History Month, once it was called. And we spotlighted the efforts of Carter Goodwin Woodson in the sacrifice, indeed the contributions he made to ensuring that people of Afro descent in America, as well as the rest of our neighbors in America, are conscious and aware of the best and most positive contributions that have made America what it is today, on part of people who ancestors were once slaves, but now are free and live according to the promise of the Declaration of Independence, the American dream. Although some might struggle, and the struggle perhaps is largely based in understanding how now, in the context of 2022, to be free. Right? I get it. That's where our work is. But nonetheless, there is that freedom. There is that freedom. And so what we try to do here at Talk Straight, and through Building Families and Communities, Missions Incorporated or Institute, as we try to provide information, encouragement, and factual direction on how to do that. So we talked about Carter Goodwin and how he started this recognition period, and it grew and expanded over time. And then we focused our attention on the efforts of the father of the black vote, black suffrage rights, Frederick Augustus Douglass, and how in his lifetime, having been a slave himself, but working hard to advance himself, to develop himself, he found himself in the position to get close enough to the earshot of Abraham Lincoln, the late President Abraham Lincoln, and be an advisor of sort on matters related to Negro challenges and even the fight to end slavery. Yes. And yes, indeed, it was the Grand Old Party, as they call the Republican Party, who pushed valiantly and fought to legislatively bring an end to slavery. But Douglass was there in the mix. And then you had a civil war that broke out. Douglass offered Lincoln good advice to allow people with the greatest incentive and benefit to fight to end slavery, that being the Negro. And indeed, having his ear, Lincoln listened. He allowed men of color, Negroes that they were called at that time, to fight. And it changed the ball game, baby. Yeah, the rules were suspended in some regards. And ultimately, they began winning, overcame that thing. Douglass fought, even after Lincoln's assassination, to continue to make sure that now that they're free, no longer forced in servitude, that they had human rights. So he continued to advise Ben, who became later the president, General Ulysses S. Grant. And he advised them to make sure we get the 14th Amendment. Right, that has to do with human rights. Erasing of cruel and unusual punishments, things of that nature. Right? Okay? And it really revisited the concept of the rights of a citizen. Now the former slave, the Negro, being respected as an American citizen, what was key to it. Douglass continuing his struggle, he, in his influence, he pushed that there might be as well as the opportunity now for the freed Negro to elect individuals and have a say, a voice, in who represented them, hence the 15th Amendment. All right? So he was certainly a pivotal figure. We moved from there and talked about an educational scholar, an expert, and particularly a great expert in the socialization of the Negro post-slavery. Born in 1868, a brother by the name of William Edward Burhart Du Bois, educated at my alma mater, if I can be so bold as to take credit to say, Fisk University, but leaving, got his doctorate and so forth, and came back to Nashville to educate former slaves, and over his life he worked and helped found the NAACP, but later left the NAACP, frustrated. He and Wilm S. Trotter started another group, Niagara Movement, which was about focusing on the needs of the Negro, all right? So there were a number of people saying that they wanted to do the same thing, they were going in different directions. But Du Bois used his intellect and focused on Afro-American intelligence and encouraging that, right? And some people strive to pit him against Booker T. Washington, right, which is a contemporary of his. But there was no real fight there. Du Bois had an idea about how to get to a point where former slaves can become intellectually adept enough to take advantage of the American dream and opportunity. There was still a struggle. There were people that didn't want that to happen, frankly. But yet he offered this, the talented 10th concept, and he worked hard to do this for years and ultimately became so frustrated that he left the United States. And I believe it was in 1962 that he died over in Ghana, Africa. After spending many years for a cause, But he certainly left an indelible impression on the United States of America, and particularly Afro-American families, communities, history, culture. Then we pivoted from Du Bois to Brother Washington, Booker Taliaferro Washington. You know. He started Tuskegee Institute down in Alabama. Was another individual who grew up in the hardships of slavery and even Jim Crowism, right? But he didn't let that stop him. He worked himself in a position where he can do for himself. And primarily, what people attempted to pit he and Du Bois with in terms of their approaches to addressing the needs and the aspirations and longing for Negroes in America, we call them African Americans now, and the difference, if there were any at all, was that he was saying, listen, what we know is that these people, these human beings, they built the antebellum South. They built the railroads. They built all sorts of things in America. They made great contributions. And even though they don't have formal reading and writing skills at large, there were some who had it, but we're talking about largely people who were former slaves and worked in the fields who didn't go to school really. So even though they don't have that, they have the intellect and the knowledge. Let's build an institution and let's raise funds to drive them and guide them in that direction. And they can provide for themselves because they're meeting some of those principles of economics, supply and demand, where there's a demand for their service, their knowledge, their intellect, let them supply it. And they can make money. Not to ask nobody for it. Many did. And you know the story with Tuskegee Institute. So Booker T. ducktails, and at the same time, much of what Brother Du Bois was trying to do from a social standpoint, Booker T. was more focused on economic development, you understand. And Brother Douglas was focused on political orientation to empower the Negro to be able to have, to express their own self-determination in government and society, even though they faced Jim Crowism. They faced the efforts of the Klan. As we look at this today, beloved, whites and blacks can both examine it for what it was. And I'm convinced that today the real fight is the ghost of the past and what some people have in their mind, some residual fears. But in reality, we can move beyond it. Opportunities are there economically for our young people across urban America to do a great many things. Unfortunately, many of them don't know about it. Sometimes it's too late when they realize it, they find it out. There are opportunities for individuals to be educated, right? And to learn a great many of things, not just here on American soil, but all over the world. Unfortunately, we have a situation where far too many of our babies just don't express a tremendous interest in that, though. You see, there's work to be done, though. You understand? And when it comes to codifying the experience and writing it down so that we can pass it on to one generation to the next from a historical standpoint, I'm convinced as a student of history, we can, collectively speaking, do better. All right? That brings us back to that point there. We got a caller from St. Louis. It's open mic night, St. Louis. Welcome. And I will welcome you and entertain your question or comments tonight. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you hear me?
Yes. You're a little faint.
I didn't know my mic was open.
Yeah, it is.
You must got it down quiet now.
I don't know.
The way you do it. Okay. You know, I agree with partially what you said.
Okay.
One, okay. It's not the child's fault that they don't show an interest.
Okay.
That's the parents, family,
mm-hmm.
and in some aspect, part of certain society, not all societies, part of certain society.
Mm-hmm.
Then you made another statement. I got that already.
Okay.
But that's not the child's fault.
I would agree with that.
Say that students don't have no interest. Well, if we can always relate to slavery, why people act the way they do today, well, the reason why come students don't have no interest is because of the faults that lie within the parents and the family. Part of society.
You know, my mom was a counselor, right? And the rest of her soul. And she did a lot of work in that area, a guidance counselor. And she and I had some heated discussions about that. She would often suggest that society fails young people who were wayward and at risk of going to jail and even dying prematurely in the streets. And I would say to her, well, respectfully, that I don't think that's society's responsibility to raise them. But whoever brought them here, that's their duty. Now, the other side of it is that many of them, the argument can be made, they don't know how. They don't know what to do. You understand what I'm saying? But now, in reality, I agree with what you're saying in jest, that it is our duty as parents, as progenitors of offspring, whether we know it or not, but it's our duty to rear them in a way that they become productive citizens of America. Am I wrong?
Well, when
about
I say society, let's take a place, a typical mythical place, say Pumpkin City, North Dakota.
Okay.
A city.
Pumpkin City.
Okay, you got your. It's the parents and the family responsibility for their child.
Okay.
It's Pumpkin City, North Dakota's responsibility to make sure that their children have the resources that they need to have based on the parental demands.
I see.
I'm talking about. People in Chicago. It's people in Pumpkin City, North Dakota.
Uh-huh.
It's not people in Nashville, Tennessee. It's the people, the parents and the family in Pumpkin City, North Dakota.
Got it. But now, St. Louis, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. That's a slippery slope. Because suppose I fail, I'm a resident of Pumpkin City, North Carolina, and I fail to do my fiduciary duty as a parent, as a father, should the government be able to come back and say, Doctor, you failed. So we're gonna remand your parental rights from you and take your children into our custody, and we're going to put the values we want in them.
No, not really. Government has no, especially federal government, has no business in that.
Okay.
That's left up to the local. And the only thing the local can demand that the parents keep their child, the school, until they become a certain age.
Okay.
That's it. If the child becomes truancy, then, you know, questions will arise at that particular time.
Okay.
But the nature of the education, the facilities that provide that education and the support systems, that there is those three groups, the parents, the family, and society in Pumpkin City, North Dakota.
Right, we're using
that's how they work.
Okay. Hey.
You was talking about Du Bois a couple of weeks ago.
Right, yes, sir. He
grew up in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, right?
Right, yes, sir.
Every year, what did that town do? What did that town provide every year for its graduates?
You were talking about the experience of the town in the 10th, where they, you know, they orientated them to that thought pattern. Is that what you're making reference to?
No. Every year, that town would provide scholarships for 10 of their brightest male students.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So that there is an example of that society in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, living out this responsibility, probably also had other things going on too for their young people in pursuit of their education.
Well, now, I'm going to argue for those who say, I don't want a public education. Now, y'all know I'm stepping outside of character now. because I'm an advocate, a proponent for education. and when the framers suggested that you had certain rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, if that is absent of desire for formal education, don't you have a right not to be educated if you don't want to be?
Well, it's just like when you come to the table and there on the plate is mashed potatoes, carrots, and broccoli.
Okay.
And you say, I don't want no carrots and broccoli. Well, you don't get to eat nothing but the mashed potatoes.
That ain't fair now. That ain't
it
fair.
It is fair. If food is there, it's all. You see, it ain't the type of food when you are eating on somebody else's wallet. It's what's available.
I guess.
It'd be like somebody who's in a state of welfare saying that they don't want no Campbell's soup. We want some Lipton soup.
Well,
we
now,
want you to give us, well, you are now being choosy, and there have been songs made on your particular type.
Hey, I'm guilty, St. Louis. You're stepping on my toes, because I grew up in Chicago on that welfare cheese and the peanut butter, you understand? And the powdered milk, that was me. And I complained about it. Now, I'm going to tell the truth, and shame the devil. I complained about it, man, but I ate it. Them powdered eggs, too, man. You understand? But guess what? When I became of the age of responsibility and what have you, and I was working and what have you, I decided that I would no longer have to depend on what I appreciated that came from the government. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. It helped you to stand on your feet.
I wasn't going to do that no more for my children. That wasn't going
to
be for me.
Yes, sir. It helped you to stand on your feet. That's all they could do.
Yeah.
It extended that hand, and that was gratitude from the American people.
Hey, you know, we can look at it a lot of different ways in 2022. But one way I would encourage people to look at it is it was a stepping stone. And I really think that that is the primary function of our welfare system across states. It's designed to be a stepping stone, a help to those who need
that. Absolutely. And
now,
each state is responsible for their own.
Correct. It should not take the place, though, parents teaching and developing and preparing their children for self-sufficiency and independence. That should not be, I don't believe that should be the case. However,
the first responsibility goes to the parents. The pigeon don't go sit in the robin's nest and raise their baby robins.
No, they don't do that.
No, they don't.
That is not their behavioral pattern anyway, the normal behavior pattern. All right, well, 657-383-094, it's open mic. Give a call here. Feel free. I know that some people are probably glued to the television watching the president in his first annual address. And as I said, our show is not going to last for 2 hours. So we may have an opportunity to go and check some of it out there. Now, what do you think we, as a country, as a nation, and this is open conversation, do you think we're making progress now toward a pivot or a turn for the better? Collectively speaking, I know different people have their own struggles. I get that. I don't want to paint everybody with the same brush here. But as
with the Biden administration, heck no.
Well,
inflation,
highest ever been
in 40 years. I got to go way back in my teens to find inflation is high. My gasoline is twice as much as I was paying it for it in April of 2020. In August or September of 2020, $1.65 a gallon.
Yeah. Okay.
We had more people working in the energy field. We didn't have to buy energy from anyone. We produced enough where we could sell it to others that need it.
Sure. Well, let me ask you this. If you could calmly and respectfully advise President Biden, as Frederick Douglass did Lincoln, given the current state of things, what would you say to him? How would you advise him to turn some of those things around?
He shouldn't have never messed with what Donald Trump had in place.
Okay.
Could have built onto it. Well, you come in trying to change. And see, here's another thing. He should resign because the things that he done with the Ukraine, as far as bribery is concerned, bribing them with something that Congress had already voted that they should have, and he took it and bribed it to get something of his own interest, and that is for the prosecutor to stop investigating his son, Hunter. And they wanted him, the prosecutor, to be fired.
Mm-hmm.
That is totally out of line. Just like when he made the statement that he's going to appoint a black female as a Supreme Court justice. That was wrong. Well,
he seemed to have kept that promise. He nominated one anyway. So, what's her name? Ketanji Brown? But yeah, okay. Now, let's speak more in broad terms, though. That's more about him personally, but what will help the nation, the country, in terms of the economy, the rising inflation, and you know, the I have some marketing tools that I invested in, and I just got them today, man. I bought those things 3 months ago. You know what I mean? Just got them today because of the supply chain issue. You understand what I'm saying? How would you advise them there? I'm just curious in terms of dealing with those economic. You said it really because you said just go back to the Trump era policies. You know, every president got their own little thing. And I would agree with you that despite what people think about Trump's personality, he had some, and he had forecast those things long before he went to public office. Had some really, obviously, he proved that he had some decent ideas about how to turn the economy around, right? Balance the budget and really spark growth, economic growth in the American economy. Some people don't like to give him that credit, but the Bible says give honor to whom honor is due. There you go, Donald Trump. You get that. But now, outside of that, he's not there right now. And I know some people are happy that he may come back and others are afraid. But right now, Joseph R. Biden is the president of the United States, for better or for worse.
And okay, you know, I'm back. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. That's okay. And I guess the focus there is we got to live with that right now, at least for another, 3 years now? We've got to live with that reality. Okay. All right. It's open mic, guys. Open mic if you're following us there. Hello there, Facebook. Feel free to give us a call, 657-383-0944. We're going to keep the phone lines open here for at least another 30, 40 minutes. And then St. Louis and I are going to go and see what the president is talking about. Is that right, St. Louis?
Well, you can, but I'm not.
You ain't messing with it, huh?
No, sir. There's nothing he's got to say.
Okay.
That I would agree with. It's just like with the president there, the prime minister there in Canada. That is an example of communism and autocratic government. To freeze people's bank accounts because they participated in a peaceful demonstration. Now, see, here's the thing. That's Canada. I don't know what Canada's constitution says about that.
That's right.
Okay. But when you have people that's contributing to a fund that's supposed to go to be directed to individuals as the givers stipulate, I think it's callous of you in talking about these funding companies, GoFundMe and one other. I think it's very callous of you to not give those people, give it where it's directed.
Yeah.
Or give it back.
I'd agree. And, you know, that's one of the powers of the 10 amendments that was added to the Constitution. It was a relatively short document, but the 10th Amendment opened the door for a lot of interpretive acts and further amendments. That were, I think it's 26 amendments now to the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah, it's either 26 or 27.
It may be 27 now, if I remember correctly. And so my point is, though, is that if it were not for that, we probably would be like Canada, where, you know, somebody can rule like a king and the dictator with such fiat there. But
well, you know, the people of Canada don't have weapons neither.
That's true too. That's true too. There are a lot of restrictions there. I know the last time I was in Canada, I often ask myself, I've been there a few times, I ask myself, man, what would they do if some stuff jumped off around here? You know what I mean? Wait on the police or the bounty or the mountain. What do you call them? The British? With the
mountain police.
Mounted police.
Sergeant
yeah.
Preston. Remember Sergeant Preston?
Right. Right.
Wow. Well, just like they providing weapons to the citizens of the Ukraine to protect themselves. But at the same time, you're coming up with all kind of schemes and action plays to take weapons from American citizens. They provide weapons for the Ukraine to protect its border. But the United States' southern border is wide open. See the hypocrisy?
That's a concern of mine. If I were in that position to advise them, I would say calmly and respectfully to the president, hey, man, let's take care of that. Because what I read most recently is that they've already identified individuals who were on a terror list with the FBI and folk like that in those people that tried to come across already. You understand what I'm saying? And with it being wide open as it appears to be, that's just dangerous, man. You don't know who. And then
you don't know who's already in the country. You don't know who's already in the country. Then you got these organizations, Black Lives Matter, want police reforms. Well, police are quitting. Crime is sky high. Never seen it level before. People killing everybody. That gets me into the point that one of the things are going on. I know that some segment of the black population, and I'm only talking about them because I to people where they came from, the ancestors came from. And I get back to that, what I've told before. They say there's generational curses. And that's what happens when you overpower a nation and beat them up, and they can't do nothing else but go to their person of concern, which was known as a fetish priest, and sometimes, you know, they're known as a witch doctor. They would put curses on families. Intergenerational curses. And then the other thing, hell, some of these folks must be aliens because this is too well organized, too geographically overlapping, and too coordinated. Must be aliens.
Yeah. You know, most people I know, St. Louis, and particularly African-Americans, don't embrace the idea of getting rid of our system of law and order. They see that as a benefit.
You're right.
I think. Most of them. Now, I'm not saying I don't know of others who have a differing view. If they asked me and I had to speak with them, I would tell them that what happens in the absence of law and order, nobody can be maintained safe, and everybody have to take a dog-eat-dog approach. You know what I mean? We back in the Wild Wild West, you know.
Well, you know, another thing, too, the thing that really disturbed me, but I kind of wanted to move away from that because I watched it so long and seemingly the obstacles to it is that these young people are not being educated.
Now, that's the
and
truth,
if they're not educated, they cannot compete. They can't stand on their own. And it's not me saying this. It's not what you hear. See, you look at the data. The data tells you that.
And you got some good young people, man, that have potential, but that's what education does. It refines your knowledge base, provides you the opportunity to articulate and to seek out resources and opportunity. That's the power of an education, you know.
And the resources are out there.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And if you're not getting them, then, you know, it really is a sad thing because the argument is someone is taken away from you, not allowing you to have access to resources and opportunity in America. And the truth of the matter is you just don't know how to go and get it. And I say that respectfully. And it's not just young people. It's some chronologically grown people who missed out on that information, you know? And thus they're heavily dependent on others to provide for them.
Well, see, others are not going to tell you how to compete against them.
Well,
they're not
going
to do that.
Right.
A team, right. The Los Angeles Rams, don't sit up in the Miami, the Patriots training sessions, do they? They don't.
No. No. They shouldn't. That's a bad move.
You're going to be sitting there in the stands with binoculars watching and seeing what the plays they're working on. They're not going to allow it. So they're not going to teach you how to take that power from them. Well, the same thing with others. They're not going to come in and teach your children. You teach your own. They don't want you to. And see, here's the point. Anybody coming out of your camp look like you has got that stigma on them. They got the stigma on them. They're going to say, how in the heck you wanted to come over here and teach my children? Look at yours.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's something. I want to know, for me, it's important that we understand the root cause of certain problems. We have a preacher here in Nashville who, and I think his heart is pure, and he really trying to, he opened his church, he and some other churches, they opened their doors to the idea of people bringing guns they don't want or they want to turn in to the police, to the church, and the police pick them up and destroy them.
Getting my gun.
Well, we're not talking about you or me. Let's talk about the individuals who have the propensity to commit crime with guns. Where is their motivation to do that? I mean, you understand what I'm saying? And then in light of the violence that we've seen, those who went and bought a gun, they bought it for protection 9 times out of 10. Who's trying to turn them in and for what? I would ask what is his goal and what's your end game? I know what he's really trying to do is to get the – there have been a lot of guns stolen. I think they said 65% of the guns that the police have confiscated were stolen from people's vehicles over the last few years. That's another dynamic. That's a whole other dynamic.
Well, because of the fact of not letting people keep their weapons on them when they go in certain establishments.
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, you know, we've changed that in Tennessee. Now you don't even have to have a carry permit. And you can do it open or concealed in Tennessee now. That was, in fact, this last year is when they enacted that. I have some, you know, I have some concerns about that because you got a lot of people whose minds are not right, and they take that as a green light to, you know, you go in a public place or a marketplace, and your mind ain't right, and you think because you got a right to carry a gun, when your emotions, you react out of emotion, you pull a gun. There you go. You see what I mean?
Well,
that's my only drawback.
Why would you deny somebody who don't have that tendency?
You shouldn't. Here's what I've said. It would be very helpful if you still, okay, you can carry, right, without, but you still, there should be some incentive for individuals to go and get the formal gun training, you know, how to properly use it and care for it and so forth, when to use it and things of that nature. That was the best part about the concealed law that I had. You know, a lot of people felt like it was an additional tax on them, though, and it rubbed against the Second Amendment right to bear arms, which the framers didn't say nothing about these other conditions. But, of course, each state has the sovereign right to legislate and create their own laws. So, I don't know.
People had a responsibility to acquire the necessary skills so that they can be functional in society.
Yeah.
Government shouldn't have to pay for that. That should be on you. That's what you call self-investment of your own development.
I heard somebody make the argument that it's just like getting a driver's license. Well, driving a car is a privilege. But inculcated in the Second Amendment of the Constitution was the right to bear arms of American citizens. So there's a big difference there, you know. Driving is something that's subject to the state's dictates in terms of that being a privilege, you know, as well as other certain other things. But when you talk about that, that's not in the, you know, that wasn't in the amendments. So people,
well,
though, I think
nothing to do with,
go ahead.
It has nothing to do with people investing in their own development. They go to aerobic classes to lose weight and get shapely,
mm-hmm.
don't they?
Many do, yeah.
And all those other things.
Yes, sir.
They go to their hair. A woman can walk around with her hair nappy. She don't have to go to the beauty parlor.
That is true. That is so true. I hope I don't see too many doing it, but yeah, and some people from a cultural standpoint don't press their hair or anything like that. My wife used to, she doesn't anymore, and she and my daughter wear their hair natural, and they treat it with natural oils and minerals and things of that nature. So, but you're right. I mean, that's up to people, man. When you start saying, making the case that somebody should provide certain basic needs for you, I think you walk up that slippery or down that slippery slope of giving really those people you say that should provide it control over you. Since they got to give you something, you don't get it yourself. And I hope I'm not wrong in that position, but it just concerns me that I'm coming to you, St. Louis, to eat at your hand, and then I get upset with you when you move your hand for a second. You understand?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Something about that don't sound right. Something about that don't sound right.
But you know the system, the methodology throughout the history of man has been tried, proved, and tested. You got to have family.
Yeah.
A natural, yeah. normal family, man and female.
Sure.
Who go to have children.
Mm-hmm.
The children go to school, become educated.
Mm-hmm.
The school can be whatever. It can be Boy Scouts. School can be cooking class.
Mm.
School can be universities and colleges.
Okay.
They come out and they get an advocation, whereas
mm-hmm.
they can earn a legal living.
Mm-hmm.
They marry, have children, and repeat the process.
Okay.
Out of those children they have will come grandparents, the right type of grandparents, not 35-year-olds.
Wait a minute now, you say the right type.
Yeah. Okay. They have legitimate grandparents of the right age. Then those grandparents will bring, through their continuing of self-improvement and self-development, they would at a point bring what's known as intergenerational wealth, the family. That can be passed on to the children. Got
it. Well, you are making reference to many of the constructual frameworks, or conceptual frameworks, I should say, that are shared in sociology, when you're studying sociology and developing these paradigms from generation to generation. You know, you look at a basic genogram and you see the construct from one generation to the next, but too often you see that there's a break in there, it's missing. And so people find themselves and have to reinvent the wheel over and over again simply because valuable information from several generations ahead were missed. I'm concerned that that's a big issue today in 2022, and because we're distracted by all sorts of supercilious things, in my view, we're not getting to that, St. Louis. We're not addressing that.
Oh, well, we're not. We used to have all sorts of examples of that on TV,
mm-hmm.
from the Bill Cosby Show, Bonanza.
Yeah.
My favorite
yeah.
was Dallas with J.R. Young. You had Falcom Crest. You
Uh-oh.
Know one thing about Dallas, he had brothers that was sitting at the table talking business,
living
in the same house. Had one kitchen, one dining room set. Everybody had their own bedroom. They come home to sleep because they out doing business all day. The wives would have their businesses, or they had means of providing for the children, taking them and picking them up for whatever center or school that they had to attend.
Right.
That was a great example of how it should work.
Well, what's the chance on a scale from 0 to 10? You can get that.
Well, what you're going to have, you're going to have some that do and a lot that won't. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting thing. It kind of leads me to this discussion. And a lot of times people will turn to church for examples or information like that. It appears to me that by and large, post-COVID, many congregations struggle with trying to make their focus of ministry and that teaching relevant now. There's so many things to question, you know. And I wonder how long this will last. I hope it's short term. I do. But I wonder how long will this last. We've already saw young people leaving churches. But now I see a trend where old people now have convinced themselves, you know, I'm safer at home. I'm okay. I know enough about God, and I don't need it. I'm okay if I don't go back. And that's an interesting thing. That's a very interesting thing. But,
well, anyway, that may happen too, but I can tell you from a realistic standpoint is that COVID is not no longer in the news political-wise like it used to. We're coming up on election season, so you can expect to hear the same old verbiage, like preschool, like more money for teachers, like money for crime. I don't know how they're going to do that after going through the police reform where they're talking about dissolving police force. But they're going to talk about more money for crime. Then you're going to have the message to blacks to get them all stirred up. Come to the poll, they're going to be talking about reparations.
I don't know. I hear a lot of young African Americans saying they're not going with that, the politics of divisiveness anymore. They want some straight answers. You know? And
you know what the young people need to learn? Rather than asking for answers, they need to be giving commands like it's supposed to be.
You say giving commands?
They need to give commands.
How do you do that?
They run those politicians. A politician is supposed to represent their wants and wishes, not for them to go there and be doing things based on their feelings and their hearts. The hell with that stuff. You're supposed to listen to your constituents.
Absolutely. 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 Well, hey, man. You know, it's amazing how I noticed when I ran for office, I separated myself from the stigma of politician. And I understand that when you're in a political race, you're technically you're a politician. But really, for them, it's just about winning votes and getting numbers. When people you were talking about, you should listen to your constituents. You should advocate for your constituents, right? And that's where the real, I want to believe, trust is built when people can see that you're not just out for yourself, but you're out for the people who you say you represent. And one of the things you got to do is get rid of partisanship, man, because you run as a Democrat, you should represent everybody, even those who are Republicans in your district, right? If you vice versa. You win as a Republican, you should represent Democrats, everybody, and not just be not as a party, but as a constituent. So that's I have to agree with you that young people have to learn how to position themselves accordingly like that, and because everybody go after them for their little young vote, you know.
Well, young people should be taught the history of this country and how it came to be. Mm-hmm. They need to learn the Constitution, the Articles of Confederation. They need to learn the. They need to learn both Federalist Papers, Federalist and Anti-Federalist. They need to learn the wars that this country went to. Mm-hmm. Those are things they must learn. They need to learn the difference between capitalism and communism.
Okay.
They need to learn those things.
I really think that I know Tennessee does not have the requirement that you pass the Constitution. And what that's all about is ensuring that you're aware of the civic process. You understand what I'm saying? The electoral process. And I really
believe that
should be a part of the state curriculum. It should be mandated that you, I know growing up in Illinois, we had to pass it with at least a 80%. What were they asking, like 10 questions or so? So you had to get 8 of them right in order to move on from 8th grade to the 9th grade. I think that would be, at least people would become more civically aware. You understand? Yeah,
absolutely right. It wouldn't be going for all this hogwash that people is telling them. And see, they really grasping for straws because you got white folks talking about white supremacy. Now, you know they're grasping for straws now.
You talking about yourself, huh? Well,
yeah.
And I recently had conversation with some of my white brothers, sisters, and they find that to be quite interesting as well. Not them, but those who are making that claim. And usually it's young folk, younger people who haven't been around long enough to understand that's just foolish on its face, and to suggest that certain blacks who are part of certain political affiliations are white supremacists. How does that work? Clearly you don't know what that means or how that applies, but people don't want to be blamed and castigated. And that's one of the other divisive things that I'm really hoping and praying that we can bring an end to across the nation. It seems to me, St. Louis, that we were getting better about people at least being able to be sociable with one another in public places, transportation, in the store.
Well, it depends on what they're talking about. But the main way to get that accomplished is with your kids first. You got to teach your children.
That's true.
So you got to be able to say, well, that's your example. That's your working, real life example is your children and
absolutely
how they perform.
Absolutely. Personal reference, my son was talking to me. He's the treasurer for the NSBE chapter there in Cleveland. And one of the things they've been doing is going to some of the little public schools around there. And he's done a few speaking engagements. And he said to me it was, it was eye-opening to see how difficult it was to get young black males engaged in the STEM conversation compared to the young ladies that readily came and were sitting there waiting and, participatory. He just seemed as though in his view, that's where the work was to get them to understand, hey man, this is really something that can benefit you. You understand what I'm saying? But I guess there's so many other distractions though that because to be successful in STEM, you've got to be focused, right?
Yes, you have to be
consistent.
It had to be introduced very young.
So why do you think the young ladies seem to be more apt? And maybe I'm wrong with my assertion here.
They don't come to the conclusion on what they see. If I'm going to be anything, I'm better make it for myself. Forget about having a damn husband.
That's a sad commentary, big brother, that I think they're going to come to that conclusion. I'm not going to be able to rely, trust, and depend on the idea of family, the husband, right? So I've got to go and position myself. Isn't that antithetical, though, to our drive to build a family?
Well, it's going to cut your population because you can't be out there full time and have babies, too.
Well, that's true, too. That's true, too. So what, I mean, we're, again, here we go again. Something is obstructing or changing the flow and the structure of society. You know what I mean? Who, man.
Well, see, it's like this. If you're going to end up living alone, or early on, you better start doing the right thing. Because if you start living alone, you get old and your health starts to deteriorate, you're going to find yourself in a peculiar situation.
Okay.
Nobody to take care of you.
True.
No sons and no daughters. Now what you're going to do? You're going to be at the mercy of establishments that's designed to take what you got to give you what you don't have.
Or perhaps what you don't want, in some cases. Well, that's a very interesting thing there, man. I tell you. Okay. Well, it's open mic and St. Louis. Have we fixed the world's problem yet? You think we got them solved? Or?
If the world is within the confines of your four walls of your home, it's a good start. Well, see, you don't have no young kids. Your kid's gone, if I remember right.
No, they dropped me like a bad habit, me and my wife. Both of them in two other states, man. Two other states.
But yeah. That's y'all should be enjoying yourself. Then probably come back and take on some project. You might want to bring in a foreign student, get them a place to stay. While they going to school, make it feel like home.
Well,
you know, it's
well,
a lot of things. That don't have to be the war, but there's just suggestions.
No, I get what you're saying. I get that. Sometimes we're so busy that we treasure moments we can share with one another. But, yeah, those are good things.
And yeah, it's just a suggestion. It doesn't have to be the only thing.
Sure. And I hear people advocating for adopting children too and being foster parents. I believe that's a worthwhile conversation. But you gotta be honest about it though now, St. Louis. If that child came from a certain neighborhood, right, and the parents were lost those children, and then you want the folk in the neighborhood to come back and be the foster parent to them, is that gonna work?
Well, you know, many times it don't, and sometimes it does. It just depends on the luck of the draw.
Well,
but like I said, that's just one thing you could do.
Sure.
And a lot of things to do, but that's just one.
No, I get what you're saying. I take what you're saying. But overall, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Education never stops, no matter how old you are. You still working on self-development.
That's correct. That's correct. Lifelong learner is what they call it in education. You're a lifelong learner. There's always an opportunity to gain something or at least a different perspective on things and what you had. So, but okay, all right. Well, listen, I'm just dying to go see what your president has to say, man. And I think
all right. Well, if you want to run off, go ahead. You can sit in for both of us.
You want me to take notes? Should I take notes?
Yeah, that would be recommended because he's going to change anyway. So you're going to say, wait a minute, that ain't what he said right here.
Well, to be honest with you, I'm curious to see how well he's able to speak clearly and lucid without stumbling there. But anyway, man. This is probably a good place as any to put an end to it. We appreciate you, sir. Appreciate you.
We appreciate the opportunity.
Yes, sir. We're going to look forward to coming back next Tuesday for another episode of Talk Straight That. And with that, we'll wrap it up.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, you've been listening to Talk Straight. And as we just announced, we're going to go ahead and bring our discussion to a close here. We'll end. I'm going to go and tune in to the president's address here. So we thank you all for joining us here on Talk Straight. We'll be back on next Tuesday, Lord willing, for another episode and share some good, hearty conversation with you. With that, we part with the late great Reverend James Moore, as he said,
"How I love Jesus. Thank you.